it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast. New Zealand lay down another imposing marker, beating Netherlands by 99 runs in Hyderabad. It wasn't a vintage game, in truth. They won't be doing mid-game throwbacks to this one in 20 years' time. New Zealand's top order all got starts, really. The find of the tournament so far in Ratchin Ravindra hit a runnable 51 to go with his unbeaten 100 against England. Will Young hit 70. Mitchell and Latham got quick runs in the engine room before Santner whacked 36 off 17 at the death. And in the chase, Netherlands were never really in it, as New Zealand's very professional attack kept the target well out of Dutch reach. I'm Yaz Rana, once more donning my Netherlands bucket hat, and with me today is Jim Wallace. Jim is our in-house New Zealand expert at this tournament. He spent a fair bit of time talking to a couple of their players before the tournament. Jim, another comfortable win for New Zealand. If you're a really pessimistic New Zealand fan, I guess you'd say that it was a shame their middle order didn't get a hit against England. They did it here today, which I think just reinforces the view that this is just a very good, well-balanced side. And I thought on what was a pretty slow pitch, Mitchell and Latham were very good at upping the ante in the middle.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a sign of a side doing well when people start chuntering about the lower to middle order not getting a hit. But I'm sure they will do. It's a long tournament. But yeah, they looked really impressive today in all departments, as they did against England. And yeah, as you say, I've never been to New Zealand, but I've spoken to a lot of Kiwis over the past few weeks. So they're my side. I'm backing them all the way, and they've started really well.
Mitchell is someone who obviously does really well against England, and he continued his form against European sides today. His straight hitting is amazing. He sort of check drives length balls over the bowlers ever six. And it's a shot that not very many players play.
No.
They're not often, commentators say, when it's a straight six, oh, that was in the slot. But the balls that he hits for six straight really aren't.
They're on the up.
Yeah.
I guess he's got those long levers and you know, he's got a fantastic eye. He reminds me a little bit of Harry Brook when Harry Brook does that. And Markham did a few. I think it was my moment of the match the other day. He did one where he sort of holds the pose on that check drive. I mean, it's really impressive. But he also hit a really flat, I think he went 7 metres high off the ground and all the way off Van der Merwe, I think it was today. Yeah, he's an absolute brute. And as you say, he turns it on against European side particularly.
Netherlands were without Logan van Beek today, but it's still a very handy attack. Van Meekeren, De Leeder, Dutt, Ackerman, Van der Merwe. 320 odd was still a pretty good score. And there's a point where Netherlands actually did pretty well to slow New Zealand down the last 10. Mark Chapman, Chappers, didn't get going at all at number 7 before Santner picked up the pace at the end, including taking 13 off the last legitimate ball. An amazing uppercut 6 off a beamer, then a 6 off the free hit. We were saying earlier, Jim, Santner's just such a good player, especially in these conditions. He's like a tall Jadeja. He's a very smart bowler, lots of variations without there being much mystery to him. He got his length wrong a little bit in the middle, but ended the day with a fifer. He's a sort of player, I was thinking earlier, he's quite lucky to get a World Cup in India at his peak, because in these conditions, there are very few players like him, really.
Yeah, he's dangerous and sort of, he sums up New Zealand, I think, a little bit, in that he's flies under the radar, and then all of a sudden you're like, he's a really consummate performer. He has been for a while, as you say, he was in the white ball stuff over the past few years. And I think it's because he looks so nice and sort of like a little student. I always think he looks like Deirdre Rashid, who I mentioned to you earlier, who any followers of Coronation Street in the 90s will be well aware of the Weatherfield one. But and he bats as well. As you say, he can get some lower order runs. He's got all the variations, all the tricks, and I think he seems like a really cool customer as well. One of the people I spoke to in the lead up to the tournament was Jimmy Neesham, and he said that he hadn't seen Santner in a while, and they got together on the eve of the World Cup in India, and were talking, and Santner brought up the moment in at the end of the World Cup final 4 years ago when he left, or he didn't play at
he ducked the last ball
of the, and Nishan was sort of saying, you know, how often have you thought about that in the years since? And Santner,
do you reckon
saying,
that's a pointed question?
I think probably it was, and that's a lot of the stuff I was talking to Nishan about. But he was saying that Santner, on the flip side to him, who has thought about it a lot, just said, "Nah, mate, I'm not bothered about that. It happened like 6 hours before the end of the game," I thought that was indicative maybe of the sort of guy he is. He just seems to take it all in his stride, and yeah, he's going through a real purple patch at the minute.
Yeah, definitely. Just looking ahead to New Zealand's next fixtures, they've got a couple of games against Afghanistan and Bangladesh at Chennai, where Australia played India yesterday, and obviously we saw a lot of turn there. So we think that Ish Sodhi will probably come in for them, maybe for Lachie Ferguson, and maybe Nishan, who Jim just mentioned, in for Chapman, and if fit, Williamson for Young. And I guess, you know, it's interesting comparing this New Zealand side to New Zealand sides of previous tournaments. I think in other tournaments where they've done well, I think justifiably on paper, they're about the fourth, fifth, sixth side that manages the tournament well. Whereas I do think this time they just do look in the top two sides in terms of management of different conditions and suitability for a World Cup in India. What is your moment of the game?
My moment of the game, again, I don't want to hark back too much because I feel like that's there's often a lot of harking back to 2019 because England won, but Bolt took a great catch on the boundary where he did one of these, you know, he stepped over and he chucked it up to himself and he caught it and he did it, carried it off with aplomb, as we might say. But I wonder how often he's practiced though since that time when he trod on the sponge at Lords 4 years ago.
And well, that one today was harder than the one.
It was, yeah, yeah, 2019. And I was watching the replay and it looked like a man who'd definitely been practicing it. So maybe Glenn Phillips or someone's been doing some fielding practice with him. But yeah, and I mean, it's hard to pick a moment in a match like that where it seemed pretty one-sided all the way through. But I guess, yeah, the New Zealand, my boys, they look really comfortable all the way.
Do you get a sense that the rest of us think about 2019 on their behalf more than they do?
I think so, yeah. And again, that's another thing. I spoke to Devon Conway a few weeks ago and asked him that. So Conway came into the side a year or so after that final, and I asked him what it was like to come into that side where was that loss and that tournament final loss and the one from 2015 hanging over that side a little bit. And he said, not really, no. I mean, for some of the guys that were involved towards the end, like your Guptills and your Nishams and stuff, you know, obviously that was a thing for them. But as a squad, it's something they never even spoke about. So I know that for a fact that this time there was no chat about, come on, let's avenge 2019 and all this sort of thing. Let's go one step further than the last two tournaments, which I think is interesting because I think a lot of sides would use that as fuel to the fire. But again, the Kiwi mentality just seems pretty relaxed. He talked a lot about training really hard, and then in the match, you want to be as relaxed as possible. And that's something they all try and do. They try and give it try and recreate a match in training. And then when it comes to the game, play it like it's training, sort of just relaxed and try and express yourself is what he kept on saying. So, and him and Ravindra have definitely started the tournament like that.
Yeah, it's interesting that in the post-match interviews on the broadcast, they do seem incredibly chilled, both Santner and Tom Latham don't really seem like guys whose highs are particularly high. They're very level-headed,
yeah,
and that must serve them well in tournament cricket.
And we were saying earlier about Southie is sort of a de facto sort of sensei figure for them. So he might not even play. He didn't really play in 2019. He's obviously there. And Williamson obviously is still to come back in, but none of them really. It's hard to name a Kiwi player that, you know, is a sort of in your face cricketer. They're all bit of a similar breed. And again, Conway said, obviously he's a South African by birth, and he was saying to me that when he came over from South Africa to Victoria, Wellington, I think it was, you know, sold his car, uprooted his wife, left all his family behind, and he was saying that pretty much as soon as he arrived, the atmosphere within the camp and just around New Zealand cricket in general was one that he could really felt like he could prosper in, whereas perhaps in South Africa, the cricket was a much more intense thing and something that people took really seriously, and that pressure dried him up a bit, whereas in New Zealand he feels like he's really been allowed to express himself and that suited his game.
Well, it's an extraordinary story, right? This is a guy who only made his international debut in November 2020. He's 32 years old and he's a proper all-format Titan. We were looking at his numbers today and just in awe. He averages over 40 in everything.
Yeah,
he's got 9 international hundreds and he's not been an international player for very long. And, you know, Phil loves him.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in that so many people rate him so highly, but he's actually not been around international cricket for so long. And I almost wonder, how did it take so long? Obviously, he initially played his cricket in South Africa, then had to wait a little bit to play for New Zealand, but almost amazed at someone who is such a clean striker of ball took so long to rise to the very, very top.
Yeah, and he's played for everyone. He's played a lot of club cricket in England, and which he spoke about really fondly, taught him a lot, you know, getting out on a sticky dog in the Lancashire League in April, you know, and copping a bit of stick. He said it was all part of the journey. Very phlegmatic bloke. I think he was in Somerset second 11 for a while. You do think, like, how did he not do something that they would have said, said, let's get this guy in? But a very, very personable. The one I asked him, you know, because he is really nice. I can see why Phil really likes him, and I'm sure that is what his true character is like. But I asked him, what do the other players give him a bit of stick for? And apparently he's a bit tight. He never gets the coffees in or whatever. So that's what they hammer him for, Conway.
Interesting. Well, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll talk a little bit more about that game as well as looking ahead to tomorrow's doubleheader. The Runout blog asks, who's going for more in the IPL auction, Baz Dalida or Rachin Ravindra? But both players look good again today. Ravindra's, again, sort of come from nowhere. I know people have talked about him for a long time, but I thought today was impressive in another way, because he didn't actually bowl very well against England. He bowled really well today. Mm-hmm. And also with the bat, it was a very different pitch. It was much, much slower. He had to be a bit more patient, but actually still managed to strike it a runner ball when those around him at the time were struggling to do that.
Yeah, and the purity, again, of his strokes. Just a classical shot maker, you know, really strong through the offside with his cover drive. Some of them we were absolutely creaming to the fence, and then flicking the spinners away. And Netherlands have got a decent bowling attack, you know. And he looked comfortable. He looked really impressive against England. That was a really, because he's only young, isn't he? How old is he?
23.
Yeah, I mean, that was like a coming of age knock, really, wasn't it? And he's top of the tournament. Oh no, we were looking earlier. Conway's
he's 10
top.
Runs short of Conway.
Conway's
top.
Ravindra, yeah. And then they've got Henry and the near to the top of the bowling as well. So,
and Santner obviously after his,
and Santner got 5. Yeah. Deirdre.
Yeah. couple of other moments from this game, Jim. Talk us through Sybrand Engelbrecht's contribution and story.
Engelbrecht Humperdinck. So he is 35, I think he is.
And today was his international debut.
I think 7 years maybe after his last first class game. We were looking at his story earlier, which is really impressive until you get to today, where he sort of fluffed his lines at the last. So he's a gun fielder. Lots of comparisons to Jonty Rhodes back in the day. He played in the under-19 World Cup final, where he took a stonking catch off Virat Kohli at backward point, dismissed the other opener, took a few other brilliant catches. If you type in best catches in cricket into Google or YouTube, which I'm sure we've both done on lonely
times.
Nights, he's in a few of them, and they are amazing catches. So he was sort of built up as this fielding specialist. What did he do today? He dropped a sitter.
Yeah.
Short mid wicket, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was Mitchell on 22, relatively straightforward chance. I actually thought he batted all right. Towards the end, came in as basically a specialist number 7.
Yeah, he's one of those World Cup stories. I mean, maybe he will play. I mean, he's surely going to play a few more games. Maybe he will show off his fielding credentials and pull off an almighty backward point screamer. But yeah, he put it down today, so I felt bad for him. But amazing name and good story.
Yeah, a name to watch, no doubt. There was a controversial moment later on in the game where it looked like Ravindra picked up a wicket. He saw Engelbrecht come down, fired in a wide delivery, but TV umpire Joel Wilson overturned the decision to the fury of the commentary duo of Ian Smith and Waqar Yunis. Smith at one point said the umpires just can't help themselves from interfering, just like in rugby union, which shows where his mind is at the moment with the Rugby World Cup going on. I didn't really think much of it at the time, because Latham's glove was just behind the stumps when he collected the ball, and the ball nestled in his gloves. And Ben was actually out of the room at this point. But when I explained what happened, so Latham's gloves were in front of the stumps, but then behind when the ball hit his gloves. Ben instantly knew that Wilson was right and the commentators were wrong, because Law 27.3 on the position of the wicketkeeper states, "The wicketkeeper shall remain wholly behind the wicket at the striker's end from the moment the ball comes into play until a ball delivered by the bowler either touches the bat or person of the striker or passes the wicket at the striker's end. In the event of the wicketkeeper contravening this law, the striker's end umpire shall call and signal no ball as soon as applicable after the delivery of the ball." So it doesn't matter that Latham's gloves were behind the stumps when he collected the ball. They were at one point in front of the stumps, so therefore it is a no ball. So the commentators got that wrong, which, understandable, not everyone is Ben and knows the laws. But I thought it was actually quite poor that, having gone so hard in on Wilson, they then didn't correct it. And no one, there was quite a lot of cricket left after that, and there wasn't that much happening either, because the result was dead set.
You'd think that they'd have a cheeky look and just clarify before they went all in, or then, you know, some poor runner would have to go up to them and say, "Sorry guys, you
I
got this wrong."
I think completely fair enough that they didn't know the law straight away, but not fair enough that no one checked that it was wrong.
It's one of the few, so
the commentator's wrong, and actually it's proving the umpire's right, more importantly. Yeah,
absolutely. Maybe they'll come out in the next game and say sorry,
official apology.
I've actually done that in a game.
Oh yeah.
And it was a guy that got 100, and I was so keen. I was doing some part-time keeping behind the stumps and, you know, not very good at all, but I was so he ran out, he smashed us all over the place, and he ran out of his crease, and I was so keen to stump him that I basically went out into the crease to meet the ball and then took the bails off.
Two huge games tomorrow. England, Bangladesh is the early kickoff, England's only day game, and then Pakistan take on Sri Lanka. We've talked a lot on the podcast that in 2019, England won 6 games, and that was enough for them to get through. New Zealand won 5 and had a wash up. That was just enough to get them through on net run rate. So you think that England and Sri Lanka, who lost their opening games, really could do for a win, and it's a massive uphill struggle to get through if they lose tomorrow. Jim, on the England game, there's been a fair bit of chat around the outfield. Mm-hmm. Josh Butler said today, "You are going to have to be a little bit smart as fielders and a little bit careful, which isn't something you want to be doing when you're playing for your country. You want to dive around and save every single run." It does seem pretty poor that there's a World Cup game where there are concerns like this around the outfield. I mean, we saw Bangladesh and Afghanistan play on the same ground earlier in the tournament, and Mujeeb had a pretty nasty fall when trying to retrieve the ball around the boundary. So that's obviously a concern, and it's not great that the players are having to think about it before the game's even started.
And I wonder if it will affect their selection. You know, I mean, Stokes is probably not going to play, but I wonder if he was fit, that would have come into it, because, you know, if anyone is carrying a niggle, and maybe a few of them are, then you don't really want to be sprawling around on a really sandy outfield. And I saw those images of all the sand come up, and it looked pretty horrible. And I'd seen a little bit on social media of people like Simon Jones, who obviously his knee got caught in the pitch and pretty much ruined his career for 4 or 5 years, and saying, you know, it's not really good enough that you're expecting players to, because, you know, you would be reticent, right? After seeing that, it's like seeing a car skid in ice or whatever. You know, you suddenly become a little bit more, and maybe it won't come into it at all, or maybe it will be. I'd text a few of the press pack who were out in Dharamshala today, and they were saying that they hadn't been allowed near the pitch outfield, which is interesting in itself, I guess. Normally they would probably have a little wander around, but maybe...
Saw a couple of them take sneaky, very zoomed in pictures.
You could see the pixelation, which makes everything look rubbish anyway. Like, grass just looks like grass when it's that zoomed in, but it looks really sandy. And I guess, it'll be interesting to see how that one unfolds, because... Obviously, it's a super scenic ground. It looks lovely. It's got history there, and it's up in the Himalayas and stuff. But if the actual facilities aren't great, then you don't really be wanting to play a World Cup match in those conditions.
Have a test match in the Highlands if that's what you care about. As you say, Stokes very unlikely to play. Jim, what do you make of that first game of the tournament, that defeat to New Zealand? And do you think we'll see any personnel changes for England tomorrow? Obviously, hard to change much if Stokes is out injured. But overall thoughts of that first game.
I think they'll play, maybe Topley might come in. I'm not sure exactly how maybe they're getting the intel on the pitch, but I just thought England again fluffed their lines in a match that really mattered, the opening match of a World Cup, and almost like they've been rope-a-doped by New Zealand in that, obviously in the white ball stuff over here at the end of the summer, New Zealand looked off the pace and England looked a pretty good outfit, but then when it really mattered, New Zealand upped their game, and Butler's side maybe looked a bit flat and a bit off the pace. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes throughout the tournament. Because, you know, if you lose another one, then they're starting to look into, I know they lost three again, harking back to 2019, but you start to rely on other people to mess up, big sides to mess up, or maybe the top two sides pull away and it's a bit of a dogfight in the middle. So, I mean, yeah, and Bangladesh aren't to be underestimated at all. So it'll be really interesting. I think there will be nerves around, but as far as selection goes, I'd play Milan, I'd play Brook. They played all these guys, right? They just didn't. It was a stuttering performance. So maybe, and you know, if it is a bit of a dodgy outfield, and I don't know what the deck, is there any chat about the actual wicket itself? Is it supposed to be a decent wicket?
Yeah, so a lot of the pre-tournament chat was this is a pitch that has got good pace in it, should be hard, should in theory be the sort of pitch that actually England would like to play the Asian sides on. I think they've got a similar wicket lined up for their game against Sri Lanka, I think. From the first game, it was sort of hard to work out because that was the game where Bangladesh bowled Afghanistan out for 156 and their spinners took wickets. Mehedi took three, Shakib took three. But from memory, it wasn't ripping loads. It was hard to work out how much was the Bangladesh bowlers, the Bangladesh spinners versus the Afghanistan batters getting themselves out. Yeah. Rahmat Shah played a shot which probably wasn't the wisest when Afghanistan had just were in a decent-ish position. So in theory, it's a sort of wicket that should suit England. And in the warm-up game between the two sides, the extra pace and bounce of England's bowlers caused problems.
Okay. So
Rhys Topley took a 3-foot, so I'd expect him to come in. Mm-hmm. I was sort of surprised he didn't play the first game.
Me too, yeah.
But, you know, Bangladesh are quite an interesting side in that they've probably got the best pace attack they've ever had. They've got Taskin, Shorifull and Mustafiz are all good. And also because Mehedi and Shakib both bat in the top five at the moment, they've got two proper bowlers in the top five, which means they can either play an extra specialist bat at seven or an extra bowler, depending on the condition. So they're a pretty handy side. They had quite a quiet build up to the tournament, but it sort of feels like not everything is falling into place at the same time, but they probably look a little bit stronger on paper now than they did a month or so ago.
Yeah. And so flipping it back on you, what do you think? So why do you think the reasons of England's poor performance was? Do you think it was just a blip, or do you think it's indicative of something else? You think they're slightly over the hill, or
I mean, I've deferred to Owen Morgan a lot of it. I think not only is he an expert in limited service cricket, he's an expert in this particular England side, and he said basically every time Sky put a microphone in front of his mouth, he said that England probably didn't go hard enough with the bat, which I know a lot of England fans watching that were probably saying they were too aggressive at times in terms of how they lost some wickets. But actually, some dismissals look like players are going too aggressive when they're actually not. So, for example, Bairstow, when he chips one to long off, modern England players probably say, why didn't he whack that?
Whereas
that was a check drive. It's like, what are you trying to do?
Yeah.
Similarly, Livingston got out check driving a ball from Trent Bolt. So sort of caught in two minds almost. So there's that. I do think, and I think the batting is sort of a blip. I think that just does happen sometimes. You're in the bowl pretty well. I think more worrying was just how dominant that Ravindra and Conway were.
Yeah.
And actually, longer term looking ahead in the tournament, I think they'll probably address the batting. I'm sure they'll be fine over the course of eight.
Yeah, it was the bowling that was concerning.
The bowling is a little bit concerned. Wokes had a poor game. Wood had a poor game. Curran bowled okay, but I don't think as a third seamer, I'm not sure. I think he's more of a four seamer who fills in at the death where he's quite strong.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as threatening with the new ball as Topley is, and he's not as good in the middle overs as Topley is. But obviously, I understand that he's offers more with a bat than a Rhys Topley, but equally, England, as Ben said in the podcast the other day, in 2019, going back to 2019 again, England have Wokes at seven, Plunkett at eight. They just pick their best bowlers.
Yeah.
And right, we back our best bowlers and our best batters to win us the game.
They have Plunkett.
Not actually what England did in the first game. So it'll be interesting to see if they redress that balance tomorrow. Anyway, absolutely huge game tomorrow. Cheers for your time today, Jim.
Cheers.
I'll be back tomorrow with Mark Butcher and Phil Walker to see if England can get their campaign up and running against Bangladesh. We'll be right back.
Social Podcast Network.